to our afternoon calendar, which is starting with items, well, consisting of items 314 and 315. I assume you want them read together.
Yes, please. 314, accept report on one-year implementation of citywide tree project, and 315, strengthen regulations for tree preservation in development situations.
Brett's.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Saltzman and I are co-introducing this, and we've been asked by Development Services to take testimony on each of them separately, even though we had them read together. So we'll start with item 314, which is the tree project implementation report. Portland is well known for its greeneries, and trees are a valued part of what makes our community special. This project started way back when I was a young community activist in Southwest Portland. I've got to hang out with some of the folks who helped instigate it yesterday evening at the Southwest Neighborhoods Forum. And because of the Tree Policy Review Project that started in 2007, we eventually, and I say that advisedly, in 2011 adopted Title 11. And because of the recession, we were not able to implement it until this council authorized the funding. So the Tree Code Title 11 went into effect on January 1st, 2015. It consolidates the city's tree policies amongst the Bureau of Development Services, Parks and Recreation, and at the time I had the pleasure of leading both as the commissioner in charge. This afternoon we will hear reports from Parks and Development Services staff about what the accomplishments, lessons learned, and challenges associated with the first year of implementation. A lot of progress has been made, and there are still many concerns. We will also have an opportunity to hear from members of the Tree Code Oversight Advisory Committee, which I formed in 2014 to ensure strong community oversight of the tree project implementation, provide recommendations about what is working well and what needs improvement. We've also had a lot of good input from the Urban Forestry Commission in Parks and from the Development Review Advisory Committee in Development Services. Commissioner Saltzman?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I'd also like to thank staff for putting together the tree project implementation report that we're about to receive. It's very timely, given that we are considering potential amendments and to the tree code right now, in fact, following this item. The report gives us a chance to step back and really think about the bigger picture and what is happening with the tree project implementation and what we'd like to see moving forward. And so I'm looking forward to hearing about that from Directors Mike Abate and Paul Scarlett.
Thank you, Commissioner and Mayor. Mike Abate, Director of Portland Parks and Recreation. And we do greatly, Paul and I, appreciate this opportunity to report to Council on the first year of implementation of the Citywide Tree Project. As you know, some of the key goals of the Citywide Tree Project involve streamlining and consolidating tree regulations, improving customer service, improving enforcement of regulations, all for the cause of preserving and enhancing the urban forest. Implementation of Title 11 has been a huge undertaking, involving the work of many people, and as you'll hear, the efforts so far have been greatly successful. I'd like to specially commend our city forester, Jen Cairo, from Bureau of Development Services, Stephanie Beckman, and many, many other staff who've worked hard over the past about 18 months in implementing this. And so collaboration between Urban Forestry, Parks and Recreation, and Bureau of Development Services has really been remarkable, and that has been the key to this success. And we've also in this process, ever since it was implemented, seen that there are some areas of improvement that need to be made. And I think Commissioner Fritz identifies that this is a project that started in 2007. It's 9 years later, and so the code probably has to be updated, and we'll talk about one of those items shortly. And so we hope to pursue focused code changes dealing with the most significant issues that have come up in the past year. We track these key concerns. We'll be prioritizing them in the next few weeks and coming back to share that. So with this, I'd like to pass it over to Paul.
Appreciate it. My name is Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to provide a report on the tree project that's been occurring over the last year and a bit. I want to acknowledge staff who have worked on this project. Importantly, Mike Hayakawa, who's now retired, and Mika Keenan, who worked tirelessly in pulling all the pieces and coordinating the different bureaus and different regulations into the tree code and having the report to this point. A lot of work has occurred over the period of time. The project has ramped up, and the effort is major. There has been and continues to be a lot of hard work by staff and bureaus that's been identified, mostly Bureau of Parks and Recreation and BDS. We've learned a lot about the requirements, both bureaus have, and we did a lot of outreach about those requirements. This involved over 50 training sessions for city staff, customers, and other groups. We have also introduced urban foresters' expertise into private development permit process. Urban forester tree inspectors do tree preservation inspections on permits and are available on call to help BDS staff with tree issues. This has worked so well that we're entering into another negotiation through IGA to have the urban forester be expert that we can consult with on issues around tree preservation or arborist reports where there might be questions. So that's been a very helpful change. I do want to point out that along with the big ramp-up in effort, a big part of the implementation effort has been the inter-bureau coordination at all levels. And Director Abate spoke to it, the collaboration between he, myself, bureau staff in our respective bureaus, all the way to frontline staff. And I might add, and Commissioner Fritz mentioned that BDS and Parks were under her portfolio a little bit over a year ago, or less than a year ago, and Mike and I would meet often, and we actually continue to do so because of the I guess, mutual investment and importance of the tree code and making sure that it continues to be processed well. Big high-level items comes our way, and we're able to discuss those and give guidance to staff on how to resolve those issues. So I do want to share that. Of course, I look forward to continue work collaboratively and efficiently, effectively on the implementation efforts, both with director and staff in the respective bureaus, and of course their customers who point things out to us. There's also been a big effort into tracking the outcomes. Certainly one of the, you'll hear later, what has happened since the tree code went into effect in January of 2015. And so data has been compiled to share information on what's working, what's not working. And you heard from Commissioner Sossman, there's the things around, do we need to amend the current code to deal with, for example, large trees and the fees that are in place that might not be proportional to the sort of some of the, I guess, the issues. So more work to come, but this is an exciting and very critical initiative and project. I might add, kind of, if you bear with me, testimony. BDS works, and you hear mostly about the built environment. We have regulations to ensure that things are built safely and livability, so forth. But we also have a huge investment in the natural environment. And trees, erosions, grading, all those things are also critically important. And so we pride ourselves in making sure all of it contributes to the city's livability. And, of course, Portland is a beautiful place. It's unique. It's special. I was on a jog at lunch at the waterfront park, and the blossoms are coming out. And I've had good fortune as a student athlete in college and beyond to have traveled to a lot of places. And you can see the difference. Portland is unique. It is beautiful. You got street-lined trees, streets. You have parks. You have neighborhoods that have large trees, small trees, shrubbery. And it's all protected. We have regulations. And Commissioner Fritz mentioned 2007. I happen to be one now, a long-standing employee. I was here prior to that, and I remember the code for trees being in like seven different places, and you had to go Delta Park, and you had to go here and there. And so we made this gallant effort that took a long time, but now it's in one code, and maybe here and there some other places. But Title 11, you can go there and find out how does this impact the neighborhood, what is required, how does BDS staff deal with that particular issue, and what does urban forestry and parks do. And so, I want to commit to you that at BDS, and I'm very proud of our staff, that we are in this with parks and others to ensure that the tree code contributes to the city's livability and continues to make Portland a beautiful place and a special place and a unique place. So with that, I'll end.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you both. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to turn it over to Jen Cairo, City Forester, and Stephanie Beckman from
the I just want to say, when Paul says he's jogging along, that's a euphemism because he's a famous sprinter. And okay. I had a friend, Paul, visit the other day, one of his first times in Oregon. He's 57 years old, and he runs the Miracle Mile in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in the top five in his age group, wow. And he recently ran a sub-4-minute mile at 57.
Oh, that's crazy. That's good.
They probably almost keep up with you.
No, I actually really do jog now. I live off the memories.
Thank you. Okay, come on up. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'm Stephanie Beckman, Senior Planner with Bureau of Development Services, and with me is...
I'm Jen Cairo, the City Forester with Portland Parks and Recreation.
And we're going to be giving the staff presentation today. So as you know, Title 11 trees became effective on January 1st of last year. BDS and Parks Urban Forestry are the two main implementing bureaus, and we've been implementing the code for a little over a year now, and we're here to provide a report on how that's gone. In the presentation today, we're going to be covering implementation activities and accomplishments over that first year, data report findings telling you a little bit about what's actually happened on the ground, some implementation challenges we have discovered, next steps, and resource needs. Just to quickly go over what was in your packet, there were a few different documents that you received. The first was a report to council memo. And the presentation today is basically going to be just covering the key points of what's in that memo. There were three exhibits. Exhibit A has outreach information. Exhibit B is the Tree Code Oversight Advisory Committee's recommendations report. And then Exhibit C was the Citywide Tree Project data report for the first year. And we'll be touching on a little bit of what's in all of those exhibits as we move through the presentation. So the first item I'm going to cover is staffing coordination and program development. This involved a big effort to get the new programs called for under the Citywide Tree Project up and running. Some of the key items was creating a single point of contact for tree-related inquiries, really responding to concerns of the public had about not having clear information about who was responsible for what aspects of tree issues. Bringing urban forestry staff to the 1900 building, where they are more available to the public, and also responding to providing tree expertise for inspections and providing information for the development review process when tree issues come up. Urban forestry also established some new programs of their own to review trees on the city's capital improvement projects, providing early consultation on those, a streamlined programmatic permit for utilities and other public agencies that do routine tree work, and a streamlined online street tree pruning permit option. There was also a major staff training effort we tracked over 30 staff training sessions, but we're sure with six different bureaus, but we're sure there were a lot more in individual work groups. Moving on to public outreach, a lot of work went into getting the word out to the public. As Paul mentioned earlier, we held training sessions geared toward different groups, both at the city offices and out in the community for different types of groups like development customers, tree care providers, and neighborhood groups. We also developed and implemented an outreach plan with the help of a consultant in Enviro Issues. The primary goal of the outreach plan was to let people know about the new code and where to find more information. A secondary goal was to provide education about the value of trees and what that does for the city as well. Information was distributed in a number of different ways that are listed on the slide here, but you may recall seeing kind of the catchphrase, call before you cut, and we put that out in neighborhood community newsletters as well as distributed at community events with a refrigerator magnet. I should also note that this month there was a set of targeted outreach emails and letters that were sent out as a way of getting the word out before spring yard projects started. Those went to about 450 recipients of different groups, like environmental groups, neighborhood groups, and local businesses that do tree care and nurseries and that sort of thing. And as I said earlier, Exhibit A provides more details about the outreach that was done. BDS and Urban Forestry jointly staffed the Tree Code Oversight Advisory Committee. It was a citizen group that was formed by Commissioner Fritz to provide advice on tree code implementation for the first year. They met for a year and issued a report in February, which is Exhibit B in your packet, as I mentioned earlier. Members of the Oversight Advisory Committee are here to present their recommendations after the staff presentation. So I'll just quickly note that the report found implementation of the code as written was generally successful. Of course, there were some bumps in the road, but that it has not met community expectations, primarily regarding preservation of large trees. I should also note that the report primarily reflects the views of the final eight members. There were four additional members originally that resigned that represented development interests. They resigned near the end of the process before the report was created. There has been quite a bit of work done to date on code changes and clarifications. The first is the administrative rule filed in October that established specific replanting standards where the code left the requirement for replanting up to city forester discretion to provide more certainty in those situations. Second is the proposed amendments you're going to be hearing about. Next on the agenda regarding preservation of large trees in development situations. And then lastly, BDS and forestry staff have been working with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to address some technical and clarification issues as part of the annual regulatory improvement code amendment package. So part of Recap 8, there are a number of tree issues that are proposed to be addressed in that package. Unfortunately, that has been delayed a bit because of staff turnover, and so we're expecting that package to come before council in October. We've also been monitoring how things are going. This includes tracking issues with the code by both bureaus, and as I just noted, some of those kind of more technical issues have been included in the Recap 8 work plan. This also includes tracking outcomes of the code. There was a lot of work done up front to get data collection processes in place so that we're able to provide you the reporting now, and that's resulted in the citywide Tree Project data report, which was Exhibit C in your packet. And on the slide here, there's a list of the main topic areas covered by the report, and we're going to cover just a few of those in the presentation today, but there is a lot more detail in the report itself. So the next few slides are data report findings, and they're a little meaty, so bear with us. I'm going to cover development permits on private property, which is the portion of the code implemented by BDS, and then hand it over to Jen to cover some additional findings and then finish out the presentation. So all of the findings on this slide are for development permits on private property, so not street trees, and not someone wanting to remove a tree in their yard just because they want to. It's for development permits. So for example, a building permit for a new house, apartments or commercial structures, or additions alterations to those same properties. And generally what we're talking about here is tree preservation and tree density standards. And when we say tree density, we're really talking about tree planting standards. So the first three bullets are telling us how often tree preservation and planting standards applied and to what type of permits. And we found that the code applies to actually a relatively low percent of permits overall, 15.7%, and only 3.9% of commercial permits.
So that seems low to me. Is that because you're also sweeping remodels in with the...
Yes. It's important to keep in mind that this is all permits that BDS issues. So it's
remodels, tenant improvements, all that stuff is in the basket along with site right. development stuff that actually affects trees.
Yes. Okay. So it's over 7,000 permits, and over half of those are alterations, and those really rarely have tree preservation or planting requirements because they're internal to a building or they don't reach the dollar threshold that requires upgrades. So that's why it's low. There are also some exemptions, which I'll talk about in a minute, that is another reason why those numbers are low. So Title 11 does apply at a much higher rate for residential permit subtypes, up to 63% for new construction, and then you can see for additions, 27.6%, and demolitions, 34%. The third bullet provides information about exemptions that we're able to report on. Sites that are less than 5,000 square feet are exempt from tree preservation requirements. So about one-fifth of residential permit sites, that's 940 sites, were exempt due to site size because they were less than 5,000 square feet. And then certain commercial employment or industrial zones are exempt from both tree preservation and planting requirements because they are higher intensity zones and they are exempt from those requirements. And about one-third of commercial permit sites, that's 439 sites, were exempt because of zoning. They fell into one of those exempt zones. So while some of these rates of applicability may seem low, it is important to note that there were no tree preservation requirements that applied in most of these situations before. So anything you're seeing apply is new, added as part of Title 11. The one area we did have tree preservation requirements prior to Title 11 was new single-family residential construction. So we did collect data from 2014 on this permit type in order to compare outcomes pre-Title 11 and post, and we actually found the similar results from 2014 to 2015 and actually slightly higher rates of planting and preservation in 2014. So I'm going to move on. I have a few more points to cover for development permits on private property. So in development situations, Title 11 always provides an option to pay a fee in lieu of preservation or planting requirements. You always have that option. So the first bullet is showing the percent of residential permits where preservation or planting standards applied that paid a fee in lieu of either preservation or planting. We found that the rate of payment in lieu is highest for residential demolition permits at 43%. That affected 86 permits. But overall, really doesn't seem to be occurring all that often. We've got 18% of new single-family residential paid a fee in lieu of preservation. That's 17 permits. And 2% of new single-family paid a fee in lieu of planting at 7 permits. And again, I want to emphasize that this is the percent. It's not a percent of all permits, but the percent of permits where the preservation or planting standard actually applied to the site. The last three bullets tell us about trees planted, preserved, and removed. We found that there's a relatively low percent of large canopy trees being planted on development sites. Only 13% of large canopy trees were planted, even though there's a built incentive in the code to plant larger trees, and that if you plant large canopy trees, you get to plant fewer trees. So we were a little surprised by that finding. Approximately 60% of inventoried trees were preserved, which is actually a pretty high rate. And I want to clarify that this includes only inventoried trees, so sites that were exempt where there was no tree plan required, we wouldn't have information on those trees. So this is only for sites where we actually collected the information. And lastly, the average size of trees, both that were preserved and removed, was 17 inches in diameter. And the code, as a reminder, the code applies to trees that are 12 inches in diameter and greater. And that is all that I have. I'm going to pass it on to Jen.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I am going to cover non-development tree permit information and then go on to customer service, some implementation challenges that we experienced, a little bit about resources for implementation, and then some next steps.
I'm experiencing a challenge. I strain my back, but not by climbing a tree. So if I get up and wander around, that's why.
You can stand.
I might.
Mayor Hales, okay. I think you are channeling that back pain. So for the entire day, I've had the same strain. And yeah. What triggered yours?
I don't know. Well, it must have been that budget hearing. I think we slayed both of us.
You're blaming our public utility? You're blaming the public utilities
yep.
for that?
That's right. They get blamed for everything else.
All right. Why not?
Thank as long you, as it's Jen. Not trees.
No, it wasn't trees. Trees are not at fault here. Let's be clear about that.
Okay. Non-development tree permits. So as a reminder, non-development tree permits are, for example, when someone wants to remove a street tree or a regulated yard tree, and there is no associated development or ground disturbance. We saw over the course of the first year a significant permit volume and workload increase, greater than we anticipated seeing, actually. We saw 34% more permit applications for non-development permits and a 26% increase in just public inquiries to our trees at email address and 823-TREE, the hotline number. And in private tree removal applications specifically, that increased more than four times over the previous year's volume. The vast majority of the non-development permits that were issued over the first year were what are referred to as a Type A, which is a little bit of code jargon. These are issued as per specific standards and review factors in the code for regulated trees that are, for example, dead, dying, and dangerous, nuisance species trees, trees within 10 feet of a building or an attached structure, or up to four non-nuisance species that are healthy private property trees and less than 20 inches diameter breast height per calendar year. Not that simple. And in these cases, for a Type A permit, as per code, tree-for-tree replacement is the mitigation specified. There were far fewer Type B permits issued, only 51 of those total for the course of the year. And as a reminder, again, Type B permits are for healthy, non-nuisance, and private trees greater than 20 inches diameter breast height, or more than four healthy non-nuisance trees greater than 12 inches per site per year, and are not within 10 feet of a building or an attached structure. As per code, mitigation for these is up to inch for inch to be determined on a case-by-case basis by the city forester. During new code implementation, as Stephanie reminded us, mitigation in these cases was further defined by the administrative rule that was finalized in October of 2015. We found that for Type B permits, mitigation often falls below the tree-for-tree standard of Type A's, which is to say that more trees are being permitted for removal in those Type B situations than are required to be replaced. We also found that large form and evergreen species are often replaced with small form and deciduous trees. And for example, in private tree removals, we saw a net loss of over 1,000 large canopy trees and a net gain of over 500 small canopy trees. This is important because large canopy and evergreen trees provide notably greater public services than others. More improvement of air quality, mitigation of summer heat, retention of stormwater instead of having it managed by expensive public systems, sequestering carbon, and providing wildlife habitat. So large and evergreen trees do more of that, and evergreens do it year-round. These high service trees maximize the urban forest asset. They're the most desirable to preserve and to plant in the city where we have limited space for trees. And these are also goals in the city's urban forest management plan to have larger quantities of large and evergreen trees. The last bullet here is about code enforcement. The first 6 months of code implementation focused on increasing awareness of tree regulations and doing a lot of outreach with the public. We all suspected that most folks didn't realize that there were tree regulations and wanted to spend a lot of time and energy as much as we could muster trying to change that. So in those cases, in those first 6 months where we did receive complaints about compliance, warnings were given and explanations and some interpretations of the code. Over the course of the year, there were 699 code compliance complaints, of which 22 were pursued as actual violations. Most were resolved prior to moving to a violation or fine stage. For example, in some cases, these were reported by the public, and they may have been unfounded, so actually weren't violations. Or others could be rectified without moving to the fine stage. For example, remedial pruning on something that had been done incorrectly before. And to date, the enforcement system for non-development permitting is not reactive. It is reactive. We really
base it off of complaints received about possible violations rather than doing a consistent compliance check ourselves. And this is due to staffing levels at present. Go to the next one. I'm going to move on to customer service. This was a primary goal of the citywide tree project. Intake staff, which are primarily our tree technicians who serve in this role, met response goals for 99% of the public inquiries, so that's a good rate. Our response goal is 2 business days. And this was even with an increase in this initial contact with customers of 26% over 2014 volumes. And the primary means of this kind of contact is our hotline, 823-TREE, 8733, for all your tree needs in the city, or emailing trees@portlandoregon.gov. We also have staff at the Permit Center on the first floor in the 1900 building. Moving on to initial inspection response, our tree inspectors met the goals for initial inspections on tree permits at least 60% of the time and as much as 86% of the time, depending on the type of permit. And this is similar to the standards, the levels of meeting standards in 2014, but there was a significant workload increase, as you recall from earlier slides, so that is an interesting thing to note. Our target response time in these cases is 10 business days, and this is from when the permit is received by the tree inspection staff to when they start working on it with the applicant. And the reason that some of the permit types are at 60% and others are at a different number, 86 or in between, is because there are different processes and time frames for different permit types. For example, our target for street tree root pruning permits is 48 hours in order to coordinate with PBOT sidewalk inspection timelines. So we prioritize the permit workload according to the permit type, and other permits, therefore, take longer to do due to the number of staff we have. And I'll just also note here that these same staff, our tree inspectors, with support from our tree technicians, provide 24/7 response to tree emergencies and fallen trees in city streets to keep them safe and clear the way for traffic. And this emergency work displaces and delays permit processes whenever the wind blows a lot. Last point here is we did have a customer service survey conducted by the independent consultant EnviroIssues. It was an internet-based survey that ran for a month, and the respondents self-selected. They chose to respond. There were about 350 respondents, and we found that they rated customer service good or outstanding 60% of the time versus 23% poor or needing improvement. A question was asked about their previous experiences related to their more recent experiences, and most said those had improved. And many of the responders also highlighted professionalism and helpfulness of staff, and we received more positive than negative comments. Now I'll get into some of the challenges of implementation. A key goal of the tree project was to preserve and improve the city's tree canopy, so we evaluated how the first year went in regards to the urban forest. And we found that, as we heard earlier from Stephanie, in the case of development, also in non-development situations, we see a lack of large trees being planted back. And in non-development, for some permit types, more trees are permitted for removal than required to be replanted, meaning there's a net loss of large and evergreen trees. So our data suggests that the trees being planted will not fully replace the tree canopy lost, resulting in long-term canopy implications. We also found that there were some questions about the ability of the current tree preservation standards to incentivize the retention of high-quality, larger trees. In development situations, for example, applicants choose whether they preserve a tree on the property or remove and pay a fee in lieu of preservation. And in not all cases do applicants choose to retain trees, or the type of tree they retain is up to them as well, as long as it's above the size threshold. It might not be the best tree, the healthiest tree, the largest tree, or the highest service tree on the property. Also, I'll mention that the present fee in lieu rate is less than the full recovery cost for planting and establishing new trees to partly compensate for those removed. And our last point here,
one year of implementation provides a small data sample. Trees and forests show trends over longer time periods, and our methods to measure those changes are on longer time frames than one year as well. So we've got a good sample and a baseline to start with, and we've got some indications, and we'll need to continue tracking. A few more challenges to mention to you in regards to implementation. Some tree plans we've found that are submitted as required parts of applications in development situations can be inaccurate. This is anecdotally. For example, tree health, the size of the tree or the species, we found sometimes were incorrect. Also, the way we're implementing it now, building inspectors are the staff who confirm tree-related information on development sites in some cases. For example, if tree planting was required, those are the folks who are the ones who are going to be out there doing the whole building inspection and trying to confirm whether the trees meet the standards that were required. Building inspectors generally have other expertise from trees, and tree permits involve tree-specific information such as appropriate tree protection fencing installation, were the trees planted correctly, are the species that were permitted the ones that actually ended up on the property. So that was a challenge, is a challenge. There are also some unintended incentives to removing trees during demolition phases. For example, in a demolition permit, the applicant should show the trees, but can and sometimes removes those to not have to address them in the land use review process that might come later. And these last two points, compliance is largely complaint-driven in non-development, as you heard me say earlier, and some of the staff workloads, especially in parks for non-development permitting and also city development projects, resulted in response rates that are lower than we would like to see given the staffing levels.
Jen, can I ask a question about that?
Yes.
What's the impact on your workload of the work that PBOT does with homeowners to replace or repair sidewalks? So there's a lot of that going on in my neighborhood. Seems like every street has some work going on. And my understanding is once it's opened up, someone has to come and verify, has to inspect it about roots and tree-related issues. How does that impact your workload?
Good question. There is an impact. It is a lot lower impact, I think, than a lot of the other permit types we do. The situation you're speaking of, Commissioner Fish, would have come to us as a city development project in most cases if it's like a whole stretch of street that's being worked on. And we assign a tree inspector to that early who works with the PBOT staff directly, and actually going out in the property and looking at roots is a detail of that process. They do take a lot of time, but they're also spread out a lot, and the tree inspector does a lot of other permitting work in that same time span. The other thing that you could be seeing is when there is a sidewalk root conflict and it's not, or there's a smaller project that really isn't a capital improvement project, that's the root pruning permit situation. And that is a significant amount of work for staff, especially because we're committed to responding in 48 hours in those situations because we don't want to leave the sidewalk open for people to trip on.
So would it be helpful if PBOT issued fewer of those letters requiring homeowners to repair their sidewalks?
For workload, yes. For other things, perhaps not.
One other question.
It would also be helpful if Urban Forestry dedicated a huge public relations budget to explaining to people that they can remove tree roots that are going to break up their sidewalk.
With a permit, yes.
With a permit. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about complaints and non-development, are you seeing any change in the amount of complaints around potentially improper illegal pruning?
I'm getting nods of no from the staff in the audience. I don't think we saw that as a distinct change in the trends we see. We do get those complaints, but they haven't increased to our knowledge.
And is that because of our education outreach efforts with the contractors, making sure that they understand what our code requires that's maybe unique and different from other jurisdictions?
I'd like to say yes, but we haven't really found a way to measure that yet. We do have a thorough attempt at trying to communicate with contractors. We need to do more work in that area. We know that some still do work without the appropriate permits, and sometimes we know they knew they should have had them, and sometimes they don't.
Well, the example, the last time you and I had a conversation about this was when I observed a company that was sort of doing this blitz through the Pearl District. And when I spoke to them, they were a California company that had just scheduled these visits of cities up and down the coast, and they did not seem to be aware of any of the unique qualities of our law. And I think you folks ended up sending them a note or something to make sure they became aware. But those it's the people doing that sort of rider work coming through our community who are low bidders, may not know our laws, and that are here quickly and gone. Those are the ones I have a concern about.
Yeah, and I think, Commissioner, you're right to have that concern. They're hard for us to connect with since they're not in the community. Stephanie mentioned earlier we did a whole other set of emails just reminding people call before you cut, and it went to our usual suspects, you know, those that we have on file. So those from out of town that we don't know about, we're really hoping they just think that a city has such regulations and would want to check. If you can think of a better way to catch that before it happens, we'd love to hear it.
Doing that is the other way to get at it is to communicate with the building owners, because often they're hired by the major property owners. They go through an RFP process. They choose the low cost, and sometimes the low cost is someone from out of the community that doesn't know our rules. So I think we squarely put the burden back on the property management companies.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good comment. Where was I? I finished. Okay. I'm going to speak a little bit about resource needs. Funding of Title XI implementation included establishing some new positions, and those were one permanent BDS associate planner. Council also authorized two parks urban forestry tree technicians. Those are the folks who do the 823 tree and the email, as well as the permit center. And 2.5 parks tree inspectors. Those are the folks who actually have the tree expertise and handle the permits. We found that given the unanticipated higher workload, we had to get some additional staff during the course.
I think we anticipated it. We just didn't get the staffing for it.
That may be true as well.
Nice. You need to frame it like that, Jim. Good job.
So over the course of the year, we found ourselves needing to bring on, in a temporary capacity, someone who served as a tree technician, and two temporary tree inspectors. So in terms of future needs, if we're going to retain the workload and turnaround times that we've seen this far, if our permit volumes stay at the same level that we have seen, we'll need to add some permanent positions. And we've already done so in one case and are working on another one currently, and others we're planning on for the future when we can, funding them through tree permit fee revenues. And some of those short-term needs are an additional permit tree technician. That's the one we have already. Additional tree inspectors and additional staff needed to do policy and outreach type work. And we're working on that one now.
So to be clear, Council, we're going to be asking for position authority, but funded as expected through the program fees.
Next steps for the citywide tree project. You've heard that to date we haven't done any real proactive compliance checks, so we are aiming to change that in the near future, and we're beginning work on a compliance strategy, and it will probably include encouraging and supporting compliance through means such as outreach and training, and also some form of conducting inspections for permit compliance rather than waiting for citizens to call us with concerns. Better enforcement of the city's tree regulations was also a citywide tree project goal, and it's a concern that we hear frequently from the public and stakeholders. And this compliance work, we feel, is very timely, since we have had a significant general and targeted outreach push, and we've learned a lot from the first year of implementation to help us. Another next step is addressing certain code issues that have been revealed in the first year of implementation. So we are hoping to do an amendment project, and this would consist of a BPS-led code amendment project. Parks and BDS would be central to the project, and this project would involve certain issue areas that have shown to be of concern in the initial use of the code, but it would not be a full-scale opening up and revamping of Title XI. And that project would absolutely need to include other bureaus and public stakeholders in the process. Some first steps of that project would include a more thorough project scoping of what issues could be addressed.
and the central project staff for the three bureaus would be funded from urban forestry trust funds, not from general fund and not in budget requests. Those trust funds can be used in support of urban forest management and urban forestry programs, and they are separate from tree mitigation payments that go into the tree planting and preservation fund established by the new code. So each time someone pays a tree mitigation fee, those funds go for tree planting and are not the funds we're speaking of. And we would hope the project could start as soon as it can, as possible.
What are the trust funds?
The trust funds, there are two types of general categories of trust funds in urban forestry's portfolio. One is very narrowly defined by code. It's tree planting and preservation. And its sources include primarily, there are a few sources, but mitigation payments that are received through tree permitting for removals. And the intention of that fund is to replace what's lost to some degree. So that's for planting, and it could also be used for purchase of property or property rights where there are significant trees. So that's not the one we're talking about. The other category is Urban Forestry Trust Fund. It's very general. And that fund can be used for education, outreach, all manner of program support and implementation needs that we might have, potentially even things like purchasing equipment. And it's not an unlimited fund by any means, but in our determination, amending the tree code is a very high priority, and that would be a reasonable and appropriate use of the funds. Okay. A little bit more about the amendment project. You actually have a handout in your packet also on Park's letterhead. It's just two pages, and it is a list of six categories with some subcategories in it, and these six categories are the same as are on the slide you have here too. And these are broad categories in which we feel that there may be amendments needed, and we'll be working more on these in the next few weeks to bring back to Council for their consideration. And these categories reflect the findings of staff from the Bureau's tracking and doing some program evaluation about what is working and what maybe not working so well in the code, and the recommendations and questions from the Oversight Advisory Committee, and they're going to report to you after this, so you'll hear a little bit more about that, and others. And you've heard many of these issues today in one form or another. Please note that these are areas to review, not necessarily to change. The project itself would determine if and what changes should be made. Oh, and I wanted to note the last bullet on this slide, so the sixth category area, technical items and minor changes, includes potentially changing the street tree pruning permit threshold from 1/4 to 1/2 inch.
We Commissioner the Novick. Amendment.
The Novick Amendment.
So I'm not seeing that in my packet, and I'm seeing my colleagues flip through on theirs. What we're proposing, colleagues, is to continue this hearing on the report for 4 weeks so that there's more input into what the sideboards of that amendment project are, and so we can get that information out as to what the first scoping of that list of potential amendments would be, and then encouraging public input, including today, on what issues are primed to be addressed in the next in this amendment process whenever the council authorizes the staffing to be able to do it.
So this is going to be a lengthy amendment process. Does that mean we can expect that we can see these amendments proposed like a year from now or something like that?
Yes, and we could also do, as they get finalized, we could do little packages of them if you'd prefer, rather than bringing them all together at once.
Well, I would. I mean, I have highlighted this issue of you have to get a permit in order to prune a branch of more than 1/4 inch, which frankly suggests that you'd need a permit before your kid climbs a tree because he or she might inadvertently break off a twig. And I think that we've made a large number of tree owners in the city into lawbreakers. So if there was some way to, but I have a discussion about, you know, where you can't arrive at a 1/2 inch, but if there's some way to speed up that process, that'd be nice.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And we also, one of the early steps would be prioritizing also what things would be worked on in what order. Recommendation. Okay. So our recommendation today from staff is that Council carry over the report and the accompanying documents, including the sheet that you hopefully all have now about potential amendment project, and vote to accept them with that project category list in 4 weeks. The Tree Code Oversight Advisory Committee representatives will now give you their report, and time for questions and deliberation will follow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Welcome and thank you for all of your work. It's been a long project and you put in a lot of time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Thank you, Council, Mayor Hales. I had the, I guess it's an honor to, to be one of the co-chairs of this committee, and it was a fairly intensive process.
Can you state your name for the record?
My name is Arlene Kimura, and I live in East Portland. Thank you very much. We want to also thank the staff for the work they did. They provided an enormous amount of data, and what we did learn is there's not enough data available to make a real comparison. So the staff is aware of that and is done the very best they could given the amount of time we had. We do feel that there is more work that needs to be done, as you have seen from the staff report. There is a number of issues that came up from the citizen point of view, which our committee heard about in great detail. And I think that those were unintended consequences that did not actually get addressed in the initial rollout as well as the code itself. So I want to say that one thing that I think has been an issue for us, those of us who live in neighborhoods that are not tree-lined and have the kind of mature plantings, is that we are losing our canopy at a much faster rate than any place else because we also have available developable lands. It is critical that we get this code and we be able to do that in a way that is supportive of the citizenry as well as the environment. We are supposed to be a green city. We also have the issue of affordable housing. I don't think they are mutually exclusive. And people who live in affordable housing also deserve a nice environment. My neighborhoods are economically not as advantaged. They are not as old. And they were all farmland, so that there was lots of clearing. I do believe that this is a first step, this code, and the implementation is a very good first step. But there more work needs to be done. And like Title 33 and Title 17, Title 11 should be an iterative process, and that we are going to be looking at things as they come up. And I don't think you need to just whole cloth revisit it, but there are tweaks that are going to happen as we learn more things and as development and the city moves forward. And with that, I want to turn that over to Chris.
Thank you. My name is Chris Hikari, formerly Chris Day. I'm an urban forestry commissioner as well as the Friends of Trees regional programs manager. I live at 8715 North Foss Avenue in North Portland. To begin with, I'd like to thank the Bureau Director's acknowledgement and dedication to protecting Portland's trees. As stated earlier, I felt that was a good omen coming into today's session here. I'd also like to thank all of you for the energy that you've put into putting in place the stopgap emergency amendment here to protect large trees and development. Thank you again for that. Along those lines, your responsiveness to public testimony earlier this month, it was very nice to see on the spot changes in your recommendations in such a quick manner. As one of the audience members, I was really impressed by that. but moving forward, I'd like to challenge all of you, as well as everyone else in the room, to move beyond thinking of there being an inherent conflict between these two land uses, that is, development and trees. It seems that the current paradigm sees infill development, commercial development in general as a good thing for Portland. And I don't disagree. Development-related activities spur the economy, provide additional tax bases, and provide, of course, much-needed housing for our growing city. This same prevailing paradigm is also doing a pretty good job of incorporating the values of trees into our policy language in Portland, that trees provide essential services to people, the city, and our surrounding ecosystems. City trees help slow the effects of climate change. They clean our air, help keep polluted runoff out of the rivers. Trees increase home values and positively contribute to measures of human health. And on and on. You've heard all of this before. My point is that we need to set up a system of urban land management that provides tangible reinforcement of values that we put on development onto trees as well. Right now, the ways that we're acknowledging trees are in many ways still on paper, in reports, in guidelines. We need trees and the spaces needed for them to grow to really make it onto the priority list. And we're making great strides, again, thanks to the lot of you and many folks in the room here. But again, we need to recognize, yes, trees have been prioritized lower historically, and we need to turn the tide and flip that page and give them their due. The piece of the OAC recommendations report that I'd like to highlight here offers suggestions on moving us into this next paradigm and how we think about and manage our urban land resources. It concerns the preservation standards and flexible design options, details of which can be found on pages 7 and 8 of that report, which is, I believe, Exhibit B in your packets. Notably, Jen Cairo also called attention to some of these in her presentation a few minutes ago. In countless meetings, the committee attempted to explore ways that trees and development can complement one another rather than compete with each other. And I think it's fair to say that all of us on the committee felt additional flexibility and incentives to meet standards and protect trees are needed for developers as well as homeowners doing improvements, and particularly for trees 20-inch DBH and larger. Support was expressed specifically for reduced setbacks, waiving parking requirements in single dwelling zones, and allowing parking in required outdoor area within front setbacks. We also recommend a discretionary review process be required when trees 36 inches or larger are slated for removal. And this is the threshold identified in the current amendment as where we move into inch per inch mitigation. So it sort of falls in line with a size of tree that is already jumping to an additional layer of review. This would shift the burden of proof to the developer to demonstrate there's no other way to complete a project than to remove a vital element of the city's infrastructure in what amounts to essentially a private profit situation. We cannot continue to give away such high service providing features of the environment as well as future potential for them as we do when we convert unbuilt urban spaces to buildings or parking lots or sidewalks or streets. And lastly, we feel that to achieve better consistency across city regulations, as well as to achieve truly meaningful transition in our collective thinking, trees as essential infrastructure elements, and again, the space needed for them to grow, must be addressed head-on as part of any and all development and land use projects, such as the currently underway mixed-use zoning project and the residential infill projects. Coordination with other city policies, projects, and codes is paramount to the protection of Portland's urban forest. And with that, I thank you all again, and I will pass the mic to Jim.
Thanks. I'm Jim Labby. I served on the original citywide tree project oversight committee or advisory committee, and then last year, of course, on the oversight committee. I'm going to focus on two specific additional recommendations on page 9 of the report that really deal with closing some key gaps in Title 11 that I think are important aspects that are ways that Title 11 aren't meeting Portlanders' expectations. Portland's, it was, you know, we talk about this as a citywide tree project because we originally aimed to develop a consistent, cohesive, comprehensive regulatory framework, but the reality is we've fallen short in some key ways, and the OAC recommends looking at those. And broadly, they fall into some of the triggers and exemptions and then that affect specific types of developments and then also issues in the public right-of-way. In terms of valuing the triggers and exemptions, the Oversight Committee recommends the city evaluate these triggers and exemptions.